Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here with you. So I will talk about DNA condensation inside the bacteriophage capsid. And this work has been done mostly with Amélie Le Forestier in Laboratoire de Physique des Solides in Orsay, and also with a student who is finishing his PhD now from Korea, Baek Hyun Sung. And in the... Is it better?
The other side.
Is it okay? Better? Okay. And so in the second part of the talk, I will also show you some experimental results and the theoretical last discussions has been done with Rudy Podgornik and Antonio Zieber. So to start with, I will just introduce a confinement in vivo that happens everywhere when DNA is in conditions of biological conditions, confined and condensed usually into domains, territories inside the nucleus in eukaryotic genomes, inside domains here in the bacteria, for example, because of the presence of other macromolecular crowding species around, especially ribosomes, and the pressure exerted by this component around the DNA and the genome, and also the very dense packing and confinement of the long DNA chain, for example, here in the T2 virus, with this old picture, beautiful picture from Kleinschmidt. So this is a very general situation. So DNA is generally condensed and confined. And just to remind briefly a few things, DNA, this double helix, all the charges along the phosphate separated by 3.4 angstroms, and these very long chains that can occupy a very large volume in a coil configuration, and be condensed by interaction of the polycations that condense onto the DNA molecule, that induce attractive interaction inside the chain and lead to the formation of a globular shape that can be a toroid, also a rod or a globule, but usually a toroid. And when the condensing agents are polycations, proteins, cationic polymers, etc. But another way to induce this coil globule transition is also what is called a site-out transition by addition of PEG, polyethylene glycol. It's a very different protocol. It's also described by Lehrmann as a site-out DNA. And in a few cases, I found a few images of DNA condensed by PEG obtained by Yevdokimov at about the same time, also forming toroid globules. So in this, the following, I will go to this kind of discussion. But recently, there have also been interesting aspect in vitro experiments using that have been following what happens to the DNA molecule under confinement. For example, the confinement could be a channel here, like with T4 DNA in the channel. And the authors followed the effect of a condensing polymer like dextran. Or it can be the behavior of a single DNA molecule on in a droplet of water or buffer, just at the surface of a mica. And this is a side view, this is a top view. And experimentally, it just lets the droplet dehydrate, and they see how the DNA molecule inside the droplet organizes and finally forms this toroidal shape. And another kind of confinement can be found here in the work with Lambert in 2000. He uses a bacteriophage, and this bacteriophage is connected to proteins that has been inserted in a vesicle here, and the DNA, after interaction with the receptor protein, has ejected its DNA inside the vesicle, and they can, like this, look at DNA molecule confined in a vesicular structure. So I will use this system, the bacteriophage, and see what happens not inside the vesicle, but inside the capsid itself, and play with this system. So in this talk, I will first describe the system that we will be using, the T5 bacteriophage, and the experimental methods, and then go to two types of results. The first one is the condensation of DNA of single DNA chain in the presence of spermine, tetravalent cations. And I will briefly discuss also different types of structure. And then the second part will be to show you what happens to DNA chains collapsed by the presence of polyethylene glycol, and finish with the conclusion. So just remind you that the bacteriophage are viruses that infect the bacteria. So they can recognize a specific protein at the surface of the membrane, and after they are fixed on the membrane, this triggers the opening of the capsid, and the DNA can be injected into the cytoplasm. Then this DNA uses the machinery of the bacteria to synthesize all the proteins and all the new DNA chains that are necessary to build new viruses. And then with all these ingredients, there is an assembling of a new series of viruses. And this transfer of DNA here is a passive process. You don't require energy, ATP, but you do not require ATP. But for this assembling process here, you have first formation of a capsid and then insertion of a motor at one apex of the icosahedral capsid, and this motor pulls the DNA molecule inside of the capsid, and then afterwards the other components are assembled. And when many viruses have been built, of course, the cell is lysed, and all these phages will infect other bacteria. So we will focus on this ejection mechanism first. And so this is the T5 bacteriophages that we are looking at. This is the reconstruction done a few years ago. The length of the DNA inside the capsid is about 38 micrometers. And this is electron microscopy of the viruses that you recognize here as a capsid. Here, around, there is a protein shell, and inside, all the points correspond to different views of the DNA molecule inside. And this is the tail of the phage, another one here. So inside the capsid, the DNA is extremely densely packed here, and you can recognize the hexagonal lattice in some places, with an inter-helix distance of about 26 angstroms. So it's very dense, very condensed, and the pressure inside is high, about 50 atmosphere. And this is probably one leading force for the ejection mechanism. So usually the bacteriophage connect to one receptor at the surface of the bacteria, and for T5, this receptor is called FU-A. For other bacteriophages, there are other proteins. And with this collaboration with the group of Lucien Letellier and Pascal Boulanger in Orsay, they provided us with the receptor protein, and we did the experiments in the absence of the bacteria, just with the phages and the receptor in buffer condition. And the buffer conditions contain monovalent salt and just very, very low amounts of divalent cation, just because they are required to keep the stability of the capsid, otherwise they break. So these experiments have been done in some cases, but not always, in the presence of enzymes to cut the DNA that is ejected, because as soon as the phage interacts with the receptor, the release of DNA is triggered. And then we can play with two parameters, the ejection time, or we can also play with some pressure by adding a polymer in the solution to prevent all the DNA to be ejected. So we can play with different conditions. Let's say I will show you ejection time here, and after a given period of time, for example, we can just freeze the sample and look at what happens in the solution. And so the solution is deposited in a thin film, about 100 nanometer thick, and it is vitrified, so frozen extremely rapidly to transform the water in vitreous ice. And we do cryo-electron microscopy with no staining and no change of the ionic and aqueous conditions. So we are looking at the system in conditions that are as close as possible as the initial ones. And this is what we observed 30 minutes after starting the ejection, after the interaction of the phages with the receptor. Usually it takes three times more to have all capsid completely empty. So this is an intermediate state, and what you see here is that one empty capsid, another one that is completely full of DNA. And what you see here, this is full again. These are intermediate states with only part of the DNA that has been ejected. So the population is heterogeneous at this step. And because of this heterogeneous population, we can, by using a large number of such images, not follow what happens to one phage, because this is not possible in cryo-EM, but reconstitute the story by looking at many different pictures. And here we start from the full bacteriophage, the empty one, and we can have different series of capsids with less and less and less and less DNA inside. And we can analyze what happens here, look at the picture. And the first observation is that DNA always occupies the entire volume of the capsid. And this is not consistent with what was predicted first. It was supposed that the DNA will adapt and will be compressed onto the surface of the capsid. So in fact, it always occupies, and we do not see, with resolution, we do not see any actual structure or concentric structure inside. This is our, of course, projection in 2D, of course. And we have all different position, projection and orientations. So when we look more closely at the structure, you have the hexagonal packing here. And when part of the DNA has been ejected, we see locally, again, some hexagonal packing, but the interhelix distance is larger. And then we move to less and less condensed. And here we see some patterns, again, in projection, that remind us of the cholesteric organization. This series of organization has been described with short DNA fragments. When the DNA concentration is progressively reduced, we turn from a 3D crystal of hexagonal DNA, then a 2D crystals of hexagonal DNA, a cholesteric phase and isotropic phase. And apparently this is also what happens here inside the capsid of the bacteriophage. Here, instead of having a population of short DNA fragments, we have one chain inside of the capsid, but the length of this chain decreases progressively. So we have apparently phase transitions between hexagonal 2D, cholesteric, isotropic, and at the end we don't see any DNA anymore. So we have a reorganization of DNA as soon as the DNA is going out. And what I will show you now is how we handle this system to do the experiments, because we handle a population of capsids containing different amount of DNA. And so, at a given, with this population, we can look at DNA condensation. And in each capsid, there is only one gene. So this prevents any problem of aggregation, which is the current problem when you want to follow collapse of DNA. So chains want to aggregate, and it's very difficult to separate collapse and aggregation. So here, each chain will be in its own container, and we can look at them. So the first results I want to show you is the condensation of DNA with spermine. And so we start with this capsid, for example, with containing a small amount of DNA, let's say here an isotropic solution of DNA. And since the capsid is permeable to ions, we can add cations in the solution, and they will diffuse inside the capsid. And then, arriving on the DNA, we see the transition from a disordered organization to the formation of a toroidal structure of DNA inside. And so we move from a solution where DNA, the distance between the DNA strands depends on the amount of DNA in the capsid, and here the distance between the DNA depends on the ionic conditions in the experimental buffer. And so we have been doing this transition from coil to toroid, but inside the container. The capsid is 90 nanometer in diameter. So this is the population after addition of spermine. So you have empty, full, and intermediate, and capsid with intermediate amount of DNA, and you see the toroid views in top view, in oblique view, and inside views here. So we have plenty of such images that we can analyze. And we can see that the toroids, for example, are present multiple orientation inside the capsid. These are five-fold axis of the capsid here and there, and you see a side view of the toroid and a top view of the toroid. This is another orientation, side view, top view, again, side view and top view. So there is no preferred orientation of the toroid. It can be positioned in either way inside the capsid. When we look closely at the structure, these are side views of the toroid. What you recognize is the hexagonal packing of DNA, because we are under conditions where we have this hexagonal packing of DNA with spermine. And what you recognize also is that there are the three directions of the hexagonal lattice, and one of these directions align usually parallel to one face of the capsid. So we have this alignment of one series of planes parallel to the capsid, and this is quite regular. Now, if we want to go, we can go into the structure of the toroid itself. This is again a lateral view of the toroid with the two parts of the toroid here, side view. And if we could go into the structure here of the hexagonal lattice, we can see that this is not always the case, but this may happen. But you have here the three directions of the hexagonal lattice. And from this side to the other one, after this 180 degrees rotation, you see that the three directions have been rotated here by about 30 degrees. So this means that there are possible rotations of the hexagonal lattice along the circular path of the toroid. And when we are looking at top views of the toroids, we also observe such patterns with domains with striations, stamens where we lose the striation, striated, no striated, and so on. And so we suspect that these two things are related and correspond to rotation of the hexagonal lattice. When we see striations here, the distance between the striations is d, the distance between the reticular plates, and it is related to the intervening space in AH. So there were two possibilities. It could be because there is a rotation of the hexagonal lattice because the DNA wants to stick to the different faces of the icosahedron when it is rotating like this, or it can be coming from the DNA itself, which is a helical molecule. So we have been looking at a similar situation, but we didn't put DNAs inside the buffer. And so the DNA outside has not been digested, and you see here the formation of a large bundle, long bundle of DNA formed by the DNA ejected by all this capsid around. And here what you see when you look at this bundle, you see also the striations, the absence of striations, striations, no striations, and so on. And we put TMV viruses inside the solution, just to have an internal marker to be able to measure all the structure that we can see here. And so, since we also observe this alternation of striation, no striations, we think that this rotation and comes from the DNA itself, when the DNA is highly condensed, and it's not specific to the organization of DNA in the toroid, but it is specific of high DNA packing densities. And this was already discussed for many years by many theoretician people, and there is an incompatibility between a high dense hexagonal packing and the chirality coming from the DNA helix. Now, we can go more into the details and look, for example, at a special place here. When you see this reticular plane here in projection, you also see that there is a regular undulations of each line. And what we are looking at here, these undulations come from the helical pitch of the DNA. We can go into more quantitative analysis. This is another domain, another part of this similar bundle here with the TMV virus here. And you see this is the 23 angstrom period of the TMV in yellow. And here you have the 33 angstrom period of the DNA pitch here along this direction. And the D distance separating the different reticular planes corresponds to 25 angstrom here. So from this, we can deduce what is the organization of DNA in the bundles. Since we see the periodicity, we are looking at the thickness, and we are looking from the top to a series of DNA molecules that are perfectly aligned in the thickness of the preparation. Otherwise, we will lose the signal coming from the helical pitch of the DNA. So this means that all molecules in the thickness of the preparation are perfectly in phase and correlated the ones from the others. And so this is from the top what you can see, the helix with the pitch, and this one and the other one behind are all exactly the same. And here we also saw that this one and this other layer are also perfectly in phase. So this, if we represent not in top view, but in side view, the structure of the DNA with the small groove and the large groove. In the thickness of the preparation, all of these helices are perfectly in phase. And from this one to this second layer, they are also perfectly exactly oriented the same way. Now, this is in a bundle. Now, if we come back to the toroid, and in this case, This image has been digitalized, and this part has been enlarged. And now, What we see here again is the periodicity along the reticular planes. This means that again all helices in the thickness are in register. And now if we look here, we see that we can also underline the helical pitch by these dots here between one row and the next one here. And this row in this dots here corresponds to the helical pitch of the different DNA series of helices from one row to the other one. And what you see here is that this distance between the spot enlarges. Another thing is that you see that there is here, these spots draw like an hexagonal lattice. This means that these spots are I will show you the image here. Here you have one row here, one black, the white zone here correspond to one series of helices. And the next one is distorted by half the helical pitch. And this draws this hexagonal lattice of points here. So in this case, it's different from the bundle situations, and the DNA helices see each other and are correlated, but they are shifted by half the helical pitch. And when we look at these measurements of the helical pitch of DNA here in these domains, we see that the pitch changes, and in which one domain it goes from about 35 angstroms down to less than 20 angstroms. So there is a variation of the pitch. So we have correlation of helices, and the shift may be different, and the helix can also, the pitch of the helix can also be changed. 28 angstroms.
28.
Yeah.
Larger than in your bundle.
No, the same. 28.4, I think, something like this. So we compare the structure of the toroid inside the capsid to the toroid in the bulk prepared by Ed and Downing in 2001. And they observed, in fact, here exactly the same kind of thing. If we look at the position of the holes between the different series of layers, we see that we have exactly the same organization that we found in our toroid. But in their case, this is the size of their toroid, and the toroids forming the capsid are much smaller in diameter. And in their case, we were not able to measure any variation of the helical pitch. So probably the helical pitch variations comes from the very small diameter of the toroid that probably imposes constraint in the structure and that can be adjusted by the variation of the helical pitch. So now we have been also doing other experiments. This was the series of experiments I just presented was done with 5 millimeter spermine, so a large excess of spermine. We found these toroids. We also showed you the different conformation inside in the absence of condensing agent. And we have been looking at what happens in the intermediate zone where there is a coexistence of the coil and the globule. And here, I have not enough time, but I will be happy to show you to people who are interested. What we observe is a coexistence of different conformation. We have some chains in the capsid that are in the coil or more or less condensed depending on the length of the chain, toroids. And we have also intermediate shapes inside the capsid, with part of the DNA that is forming the toroid and part of the DNA that is not condensed into the toroid. So we have intermediate shapes because there is not enough spermine to condense all the DNA inside. And so this structure could be interesting because this means that part of the DNA is still charged and the other part is not. And this may be interesting to discuss for biological questions. Now, in the second part, I will show you what happens when we condense the DNA inside the capsid with PEG. So this part of the work, we did the experimental work, and Rudy Podgornik and Antonio Zibo were thinking about the theoretical aspects of such things, and so we it's a joint presentation. We can put bacteriophages in the presence of PEG, and we use 15% PEG, and PEG is very currently used to aggregate the phages and to precipitate them. And this is what you see here. You have regions with a lot of phages, and regions, this is a very low magnification of the cryofilm. But when you increase the magnification, you can find the capsid here, but Electron microscopy is more difficult because the film is not so thin, and the quality is sometimes more difficult to obtain. And I must mention that in a paper by Jembeva and Tal in 2008, they were doing experiments with PEG, and what they showed, they do not mention, but apparently in one of their pictures, there are some phages where we can imagine that there are toroids, and these are probably toroids, but they didn't focus on this. And so what we do here, I will show you, is what is the two series experiments that we have been doing. Let's start from a capsid containing a given amount of DNA. Here we started with length of DNA about 17 micrometer. That gives this kind of organization in the absence of any condensing agent, correspond to a cholesteric-like organization. And in the first series of experiments, the ions have been added outside of the capsid and they migrate into the capsid and let the DNA condense. And in the second series of experiments, we added a polymer, PEG-6000, outside of the capsid, and it stays outside of the capsid. So we are doing kind of experiments like Rho and Passagen that have been doing for years, so LEM and also many others. And this difference here is that the dialysis membrane here is the capsid of the is a protein capsid, and this membrane is not flexible, it's quite rigid. And we under our conditions of experiments, we didn't see any change in the shape of the capsid. And so, when we look at what happens inside the capsid, we see the toroid formation that I already described, and here you also recognize the toroid inside the capsid. And when we look at side views, there are differences. Here, you recognize a quite compact toroidal structure. And in the case of PEG, you see that the toroidal structure is still there, but you see that the DNA is spread on the surface of the capsid. And the surface of interaction between the DNA and the capsid is much larger here than here. So the method to condense DNA are completely different, and we have different structure. We have toroidal structure, but differences between them. So Rudy and Antonio have been working on the theoretical approach. I'm not a theoretician at all, so but they rely on the work by Ubink and Odaik, who already they analyzed the structure of the toroid by considering the bending energy and the surface energy that are antagonistic forces to define the shape of the toroid. And they use this parameter that they use to quantify and to determine the shape of the toroid. And they came up with this kind of diagram. They change this parameter, alpha, what they call alpha t. And by changing this parameter, they see how the two radii of the toroid, the large and the small one. This is the large one and the small one, and this is just half of the toroid section here. And by changing this parameter, it can go from large toroid with a small section to smaller toroid with a larger section. And what both of them have been doing is doing the same thing with this parameter here, but considering that the DNA now is confined into a sphere. And they took a sphere that corresponds to the volume of the icosahedral capsid, and they took the length of the DNA that we have been considering in the experiments. And this is the Ubink and Okaik case with no confinement, and these are different conditions of confinement. And what they added is this parameter that corresponds to the interactions with the capsid. So introduce the possible attractive interactions between the DNA and the capsid. And what they see is how the section of the toroid, this is one part of the toroid, the opposite part would be here. And so how, independent of this parameter here, when they increase interaction of the capsid with the capsid, they distort the shape of the section, and it enlarges and spreads onto the capsid. And they observe that instead of being flat or convex, the inside face here turns concave. And this is independent on this parameter. So apparently, what happens is that you increase, when you introduce attractive interactions between the toroidal DNA and the capsid, the cross-section become concave and crescent-like, as I showed before. And for large adhesion and attractive interaction, the section only weakly depend on alpha T. So you don't see so much difference between these two three situations. So what can we understand from this? Apparently, when we are using spermine to condense DNA, there are low interaction with the capsid, considering the shape, the section, comparing the shape of the experimental section with the shape of the theoretical section. And when using PEG, the section is spread, as is was seen in the presence of attractive interaction with the capsid. So this situation would correspond to something like here, and this situation somewhere here, with much larger attractive interaction. So we notice that the methods to produce the toroids are completely different. Here we have spermine, so we have explicit attractive DNA interactions to form the toroid, and apparently low attractions with the capsid. And in this case here, we have no condensing agent, but we have been adding PEG outside of the capsid and changing the chemical potential of water outside of the capsid, and probably changing also the potential of water inside of the capsid. This leads to the condensation of DNA. And what we don't know, and many open questions, and is why this changes this attraction between the capsid and the DNA. It is possible that this condensation is assisted by the surface of the protein capsid here, and there are experimental existence of there are a few examples where the surface can help the decondensation of DNA, and this is probably that may also exist here. And what is also strange here is that usually when people are doing experiments with PEG and DNA, there is no membrane between them, or there is a flexible membrane. But here the membrane is not flexible. And in fact, we probably have, we have PEG outside, we have DNA here, and we have no PEG and no DNA here. So we have three compartments here. So I'm not sure, at least I'm not sure to understand everything. So I could go into detail, but I think I'm out of time. So to conclude, I would say that when we are doing the experiments with transfer of DNA, and when the phage is ejecting DNA inside the bacteria, the DNA inside of the capsid must be in under conditions where DNA repel each other, the different parts of the DNA repel each other. And in fact, if you condense DNA, for example, with cations forming such toroids, you will cancel the ejection of DNA because there are interactions here that will prevent the ejection. For the other situation where there is assembling of DNA inside, it could be the opposite, because it could be preferential to have DNA condensed and forming toroids or spread toroids inside of the capsid, because by this way you have some space inside that would maybe help the motor protein here that has to pull the DNA inside of the capsid. And it is possible that this kind of effect exists inside the bacteria, because we are in the cytoplasm of the bacteria with many cationic species that can diffuse through the capsid, and also macromolecular crowding coming from all the molecules around the capsid here. So this is just to think about biological question. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks a lot for your wonderful talk. Questions, please? Yep.
Could you say again, please?
In nuclear ligation assay, which was kind of the earliest forerunner of techniques like 3C and high C and stuff like that, instead of using formaldehyde to cross-link the DNA, what you'd use is spermine and spermidine to condense the DNA.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if, based on some of the things that you've been looking at, you might comment on the extent to which the use of spermine and spermidine versus formaldehyde versus other agents could affect the structure that you're trying to look at inside the nucleus.
Of course, it affects the structure because we condense it, so we change completely the organization of the chain. What we know from other studies that we performed many years ago and other people also is that when you condense DNA with polycations like this, you form liquid crystals. So it's not it's something that is fluid. The fluidity is restricted, but the DNA can still reorganize, and there are probably reorganization into these structures. So, but maybe I do not answer your question.
No, I think that's extremely helpful. Thanks.
Thank you.
In the case on the bottom right, what happens if you take away the peg after preparing? Do you need the peg to be present?
It's reversible completely, because we also did experiments by preventing complete ejection of DNA by using peg. Yeah. And in this case, we block the capsid at some period of the ejection process.
And you get the
And in this case, we add spermine to condense it, and we remove peg. We can play with both systems.
So, let me rephrase my question. If you take the case on the lower right, yeah, prepare it in this way, and you remove the peg, I would expect the structure to remain unchanged.
No, you go back to the initial situation.
Okay. Thank you.
It is reversible. Yeah.
I was wondering. I was wondering the structure you showed in the beginning, where you had the twist in the bundle. Have you estimated what that does to the elastic energy of the coil? I mean, I would expect that it would kind of even out the radius of curvature and maybe lower the elastic energy, the total elastic energy.
I don't know how to calculate this, so it's up to you. I don't know.
Okay.
I would be interested to see what can be started.
At first glance, it seems lower because you have an average radius of curvature for all of them. Maybe it's not important because you were showing this sort of disordered state without condensing, and so maybe it's not a relevant parameter. But
I don't know.
Hi, I have just a very detailed questions. You talk about using the peg to condensate the DNA, right? So what's the molecular weight of the peg? Because you can have longer ones, shorter ones.
In this situation, it was 6,000.
6,000.
And it was 15%, 6,000 peg. It's a pressure of 3.2 atmosphere, I think.
Okay. So have you tried to vary the molecular weight?
No, we're planning, but each experiment is quite long, but we can vary a lot of things, yes,
okay,
of course. Yeah.
Thanks.
How do you know that PEG does not go inside on the lower right? How do you know that PEG?
Okay, thank you. How do you know that on the lower right, PEG does not go inside the capsid?
You're right. I didn't check. So maybe it's a good point. I don't know how, but it was supposed not to go through because there are not so big holes. So for me,
But it's neutral, so.
Okay. Okay. Yes, it's a good point.
You've shown these nice structures with oriented, azimuthally oriented DNA. And there if we speak about, for instance, draw a line from the center of the DNA axis to the middle of the minor groove, let's call it a spin or azimuthal orientation. They all orient in the same way. Now, the theory actually tells you that if you compress it even further, there will be more complicated structures. Spins will not be parallel, but will be more complicated structure in terms of spin. Can you go to higher densities? Can you compress them even more and to check that kind of theoretical prediction?
We could do this, but we already observed with short DNA fragments that we can have different kind of organization.
Sure.
But this was with short DNA fragments, mm-hmm, and not with spermine, but with just dehydration experiments. So here we can change the ionic conditions, of course, and see this is one of the possible things to see how it changes the organization.
But these have not yet been done.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Françoise, this is to do also with Shura's question. PEG exerts a depletion interaction, and in other cases, it's known for colloids that if you put colloids with depletants, then you can do surface crystallization. They will condense onto a surface, basically because of the depletion interaction. Has anybody ever looked what happens if I take, let's say, a mica surface, and I take DNA, and I add a lot of PEG? Does it go onto the mica surface by any chance?
I didn't see any experiments like this.
It does?
So okay. Then this might be a form of wetting, basically. You press it, it just begins to wet the surface for the same reason. It's not that you get attraction between DNA and the surface, but rather that the depletion interaction forces the material on the surface to increase the available volume for the depleting.
Maybe.
Yes, well, Shure has questions that a peg is not necessarily outside. So you might be able to explain this if some peg is in fact inside.
I don't think so, but I cannot prove it to answer your point.
Oh, thank you. Can you also tell us something about the dynamics of how these structures evolve? What is the characteristic time?
We have been waiting for hours to try to be under conditions where they do not change, but we have to do everything to explore this parameter, of course. But
you don't. There is no experimental way to see what happens on shorter time scale.
Yes, we can do a series of experiments and wait for short time one, time two, time three, and do all a series of experiments to see if there are changes in the conformations.
Okay. And what happens? For instance, this torus or whatever is the name of it on the lower right. How does it evolve with time?
Yes, this I don't know. We didn't do the experiments. We can do plenty of things. Yeah.
Thank you.
We have plenty to do.
So we are looking forward to your next talk.
Okay. Thank you.
If the peg indeed doesn't get into the capsid, then it's quite hard to understand how the attractions take place. I was thinking about alternative explanations. What is the concentration of PEG? Is it enough to change perhaps the van der Waals interactions between, if you imagine that the PEG is outside, then that's a possible thing. The other question I had is, you say that the capsid doesn't change in the presence of PEG. To which extent is this correct? I mean, is it up to 1%, 10%? Could we imagine that the capsid and the pressure does indeed change local the structure and of the proteins, and that would change interactions with the DNA?
In these experiments, we use 15% PEG. And 15% PEG, so it's not a lot, and the pressure is about 3 atmosphere. I don't know if it is for people who have been trying to change the structure by pushing outside of the capsid to distort it. They apply much higher forces. I do not remember the numbers, but as far as I understand, and as I remember, Chuck could check maybe this, and I think you need much higher pressure to do some changes. What we see is here just by looking by electron microscopy, we measured a lot of the capsids, but we didn't see any change. But maybe there are minor changes we cannot say, but what we see is not noticeable. But this does not mean that there are not changes of the proteins that constitute the capsids are also made of proteins with different positive, negative charges. They are the same in two set of experiments, but maybe the PEG has also some consequences on the structure of the protein. From the outside, it could be maybe some changes and change some electrostatic interaction between DNA and the protein. I don't know all this stuff, but.
Francois, thanks a lot.
Thank
again.
You very much.
Our next speaker is Rob Phillips from Caltech. He will tell us how viruses make new viruses.